Hi, this is Mel Allen, the editor of Yankee. I want to tell you about one of my favorite stories. It was February 22nd, 1980, and I was staying at a motel on the mid-coast of Maine while researching a story that I really no longer recall exactly what it was. About 300 miles away, there were 8,500 fans crowded into the Olympic Arena for what was expected to be a Soviet Union men's hockey team rout of the U.S. team. It was the semifinals. Only a few months earlier, that same Soviet team, who by far were the most dominant team in the world, had beaten this same team of U.S. college kids 10-3. But now, here they are, both undefeated. I watched on the small TV in that motel, unable to believe what was happening on the ice. The game was being broadcast on tape delay, but this was long before the internet sent results instantly in the world, and that evening we did not know the outcome, even though the game had ended a few hours earlier. The U.S., as we all know, won 4-3. The game became known as the Miracle on Ice. It's considered the single greatest victory in American sports history. And if ever a game could unite a country, even if only for a few days, this was the one. That team had a number of New England players. There was goalie Jim Craig and team captain Mike Ruzzioni. And it was Ruzzioni who had grown up in Winthrop, Massachusetts, and who had played at Boston University, who scored the winning goal. And I had just started a new series for Yankee called Family Album. Months had gone by since that miracle victory. Ruzzioni had become an American hero, and I wondered how all this unexpected attention had affected him, and by extension, his family. He had grown up in a three-decker in a working-class neighborhood, and everyone in that house was related. Sisters, brothers, uncles, aunts, cousins. The kids growing up flowed into each other's homes as freely as the wind, and my first visit to the family centered on Mike's father, Eugene Jeep Ruzzioni. Jeep was a sewage treatment worker who for 25 years also worked three nights a week at a popular pizza place cafe in East Boston to wait on tables and tend bar. There were times when he held a third job as well, making what he could so that his six kids would not have to do without sports equipment. And when I go out to report a story, I always hope to find characters who can come to life on the page, and Jeep offered the perfect way into this story. When I said to him that Mike looked a bit like him, he responded, "Yeah, some of the guys were just telling me that. When you go into the bar, there's a huge picture of Mike along the wall. I'll look at it, and sometimes I think of when I'd take him down on a Sunday when he was little. He'd go through the seats and benches on his knees holding a flashlight, looking for nickels and dimes dropped the night before, and sometimes he'd find 80 or 90 cents. Now people come in all the time with their kids and call me over. They tell their kids to shake hands with Mike Ruzzioni's father. And sometimes I run out to my car and get them pictures of Mike, and they sit there beaming." So Jeep Ruzzioni and I hung out for a while, then he put on the tape of the Soviet-U.S. game and fast-forwarded to the last minutes of the final period to when his son scored the winning goal. And he gave me the sort of quote that when you hear it as a writer, you think, "Oh, this is great. This is just great." "Every time you expect something from Michael, he comes through," Jeep told me. "The good Lord must have been on his side from the start. It was uncanny. The score was 3-3 in the Russian game, and I'm sitting next to my wife, and I said, 'You know, Helen, Michael's not done anything yet.' I says, 'Come on, he's due.' I no sooner got done talking than I see the puck slide across to him, and as soon as he got the stick on it, I yelled, 'Shoot, Mike, shoot! Don't waste time,' and he did. He just let it go. And I saw that net stretch, and I said, 'Oh, my God, that's it.' It was beautiful. And I started to think, this goal here could be a big thing. If it could stay up with no other team scoring, I knew the impact it was going to have. I held tight to my St. Anthony's medal. 'This is for Michael,' I said. 'Make this thing end 4-3. No more, no less. Because I knew what would happen. He's the captain. He's got the winning goal, and the people will never forget that.' I always tell young writers, don't always count on going just one time to report a story. That when you go back, people will start seeing how much you want to tell their story, and what you learn deepens. So I returned, and I met Mike's mother, Helen. Another time returned, a third time, to finally meet Mike himself. He was engaging without a shred of pretense, and like his dad, he was so quotable, you prayed you caught it all on the tape. 'Everyone expected me to change because suddenly I was making money,' Mike said. 'I've probably made more since the Olympics than my dad's made in 10 years. But I don't come for money. It doesn't concern me. If I make it, fine. If not, fine. I want to spend my money on my friends and two other people. myself, and my family. Because if we'd lost, I wouldn't have a damn thing. I'll be down at the gym tonight playing basketball because the adult school is open. Probably coaching hockey somewhere. But we did win. And when you win in America, you're rewarded. And maybe all the work my mother and father did and all the work my uncles and aunts did is coming out now in me. And we can say finally, hey, enough is enough. It's time for the Ruzionis to do something good. We called the story The Celebrity. It ran in the February 1981 issue on the one-year anniversary. Some of the best days of my career have been meeting and telling the stories of ordinary New Englanders who have extraordinary experiences. This is one of those times. I hope you read it to the end because I have never had a more favorite last line. This is Mel Allen. Hope to see you again soon.